Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 55, correct? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Prajati Yadak. Prajahati Yadakaman. Sarvan Partha Manogatan. Atmanya Atmanyevat. Manatushta Stita Pragyast Dochate Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Prajahati Yadhakaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan Atmanyevatmanatushta Sita Pragyasta Dochate. Someone else? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Jahati Yadha Kaman. Tharvan Pata Manogatan. Adyan Mela Manatusha. Sita Pragyasta Dochate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Jahati Yadha Kaman. Sarvan Pata Manogatan. Atman Yevan Manatusha. Sita Pragyasta Dochate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Prajahati gives up. Yada, when. Kaman, desires for sense gratification. Sarvan, of all varieties. Partha, osanaprita. Manahagatan, of mental concoction. Atmani, in the pure state of the soul. Eva, certainly. Atmana, by the purified mind. Pushtaha, satisfied. Stita pragyaha, transcendentally situated. Tada, at that time. Uchite, is said. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, a key. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Purport. The Bhagavatam affirms that any person who is fully in Krishna consciousness or devotional service of the Lord has all the good qualities of the great sages, whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualifications, because he is sure to be taking refuge in his own mental concoctions. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then, automatically, sense desires subside without extraneous efforts. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation, for this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense desires resulting from petty materialism. Rather, he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. Read the translation again. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. This verse is talking about sense gratification and our desire for sense gratification and how it's actually not real, how it's a mental concoction. And actually, real satisfaction, spiritual satisfaction, is beyond this material world. And this is actually what gives the soul real satisfaction. I mean, we always kind of talk about mental concoction. You make something up, mental speculation, all these things. We kind of, you know, don't speculate, Prabhu. It's not real. And we talk about this world as if it's illusion, but then we have this other doctrine that actually, you know, the world is spiritual in the sense that it's Brahman and that it becomes material. But ultimately, these concoctions of enjoying this energy is what is illusion. I mean, every single particle of this whole universe is maintained and permeated by Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, who is, you know, personality of Godhead and is an expansion ultimately of the Purusha avatars, and then you go up all the way to Baladeva, who is an expansion of Krishna. So Krishna has made this material world, which means that it's for his purpose. Ultimately, this world is for Krishna. We think, we kind of say this is Krishna's, like, it's a prison for the people who don't belong in the spiritual world, or it's the school that we learn to get back to the spiritual world. But he's given us seemingly dull matter that we can so-called enjoy, or we can use in his service. Everything can be used in Krishna's service. We often talk of Maya. And I mean, in one way you can say that Maya is the material energy, but the way we use it in the form of illusion, Maya means that which is not. Srila Prabhupada says Maya means that which is not. That which is not is that which is not connected to Krishna. There's nothing in this realm, in this material world, in the spiritual world, that is not connected to Krishna. I mean, we just looked at the connection to Krishna. It's specifically, if you wanted to draw a circuit diagram or I don't know, a food chain or whatever you would call it, you can see that from Krishna, Baladeva, then the Chaturu, and then again, they come again, and then down, Purusha, and then from Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, every single atom, he is in every single atom. So ultimately, you can see that, just philosophically speaking, you can see the link already there. So everything is connected to Krishna. That is every single atom of this universe, every single complete atom of this universe. Not a single atom exists in this universe which is not connected to Krishna. There is no non-matter. The Buddhists, they aspire to be non-existent. Not all Buddhists, of course, aspire to be non-existent in this, and or even not non-existent, but not existent, but not non-existent and existent and not existent. Anyway, those who've studied the four. Have you heard of that one? So I think they ask the Buddha, does it exist? And he says, no. Does it not exist? And you think, oh, because it doesn't exist. And no, it does not exist. Does it exist and not exist? No. Does it neither exist nor not exist? And the answer is also no. I mean, this is a great, like, it's a great way to get your head confused and make you get a headache, but there is nothing like that. There is no non-existence. There is a concept of it that is there, but there is no actual real reality. There's nothing that does not connect to Krishna, which is being. And even Srila Prabhupada kind of makes a little comment when the Buddhists go for their nirvana, those who want to aspire for this non-existent realm, he says they go to the Viraja River, the Karna Ocean is known as the Viraja River, and they take a swim and they are purified over there, which I think is like a kind of poetic way of saying they merge into the Karna Ocean for a long period of time until they realize that there is no non-existence, because ultimately my Vaidis will go for the spiritual, you know, Brahma Jyoti, and there's a slight difference, but the Karna Ocean is also spiritual, but it's in the Mahatattva. Anyway, we won't get into that. But ultimately, everything, I mean, from the spiritual world to the in-between, to the material world, to the hellish planets, to the very fathoms of this universe, is connected to Krishna and is maintained by Krishna. And, I mean, the Ramanuja Sampradaya will say it is Vishnu, it is Him. And we will say it is Krishna, as in it's Krishna's energy. But ultimately, the understanding is the same. It's connected to Krishna. So when we quote-unquote, leave the spiritual world, because we don't, according to our philosophy, although it's very, if you go very close to our direct sampradaya, you'll find different philosophies. But ultimately, as far as I have understood it, we associate with a false ego, but we remain in the spiritual world. So actually, this whole world that we, I mean, the material world exists, but our delving into it is just merely our own grabbing onto this false ego, and we're just linking ourselves. I often always explain it as a video game. I mean, I suppose in Mahabharata and all those things, they didn't have the analogy of the video game because they didn't play video games, but, you know, or if you watch TV, for example, you sit in front of the screen and you join this new world, and you go through adventures, and, you know, your player is dying, or the hero of the story is dead, or, you know, their loved one is dead, or, and, you know, people cry. You see a drama or a movie and you cry, and these people are all fictional. I mean, of course, you can do a recount, but they're ultimately fictional characters, and when they die or when they're hurt, you feel it, and you identify with it. But ultimately, you're sitting on a seat in the real, quote-unquote, real world, and you're just looking at this imagery, and you're identifying with it. So this is similar to what we're doing. We're in the spiritual world, and we're gazing into this false ego, this false identification, and we're associating with it. You know, we're just sitting in the corner of Goloka Vrindavan playing our Xbox, playing the PlayStation. No, we're just, you know, we're totally absorbed in this other realm of non-service to Krishna. You know, a realm that doesn't really exist. And Krishna's provided this whole facility where we can pretend it exists. But ultimately, we come here and then we learn to utilize this nature for Krishna so we can remember. And we can, you know, we detach ourselves from this false ego eventually, and then we're back in this spiritual realm where we're, I mean, we are there, but we're consciously back there. And there's so much controversy about, you know, how the jiva fell, although we don't exactly say he did fall, or, you know, how we came here and those things. But ultimately, I was told that we are a minute particle of Krishna. Again, we are connected to Krishna. We are Krishna's marginal energy. We are his jiva tattva. And we are the same substance as him. He is the supreme control and he is the supreme enjoyer. So we kind of sometimes feel like being the supreme control and the supreme enjoyer because we're a minute particle of him. So when we conceive to be the ultimate material, I mean, the ultimate controller and enjoyer, that's when we grasp this false ego. And so ultimately, that's why we're here. And you can really analyze it if you want to get kind of like psychological about it. Every single interaction we have in our lives, how it's either to control or to enjoy. And when something's out of our control or doesn't bring us enjoyment, then it brings us distress. You know, I don't know, it's totally out of my control. And you start to freak out. When something goes wrong, why is it that we freak out? Because we lost our control. You know, we're craving for that, and when we lose it, then we feel this pain. You know, when someone captures you, you have this ultimate feeling of dread because they are taking control of you. You've lost your control, and I mean that ultimately comes from this desire, this hankering to be God, and the other aspect is supreme enjoyer. When do we let people take control? When they will provide us enjoyment. Only time if you think about it, the only time you'll give someone control of your life is because you, and even then you're giving it. It's like you go, okay, I'm God and I'm going to lend it to you because, you know, I see you as my little, you know, my demigod and you'll take care of it. We give it to them so they can give us our enjoyment. And you can see this in relationships, really. People maintain friends because they can control them or they can enjoy with them or from them. And this is the basis of all relationships in the material realm. Children often do not bring joy to their parents unless they do really great things. But they're an object that can be controlled. I mean, I'm not just saying like little children, I'm saying when they get older as well. They're like your puppet in this material world and you can live through them, and parents get really upset when the child does not do what they're told to do because you don't have control over them. And, you know, creating is like a God project. You create progeny and it's like you have your own little empire, you have your own little world, and when your little world disobeys you, then you're no longer God, and then you freak out. And, I mean, it takes a lot of courage and strength and understanding or just plain old detachment to let someone live their own life and not control them. But ultimately, that's why we say, actually, you know, when people have family life and Krishna consciousness, they're making children to serve Krishna, and or we understand that Krishna is in control of them, and then we let Krishna take control. You know, we can steer them in the right direction, but then Krishna is actually deciding what's going on, and we're not deciding what's going on. So, I mean, that's family, but friendships, same thing. You know, that people make friends with the people who will go out with them, go drink with them, you know, go this and that. You know, romance is that. It's just, the term is, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And if you don't scratch my back, then I'm definitely not going to scratch your back because that's against the contract. I mean, it says here, scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And often it's normally the first. And people have this whole lifestyle like this. I mean, if you take a very generalized example of the male-female, you know, if you try to say, you know, Purusha and Prakriti, for example, one is, you know, a man is often maintaining their wife for sense gratification, and then the wife is just giving some amount of sense gratification so they can have their facility. And it's just like this exchange, and it's just done so grudgingly. And no one's doing it, no one's got their happiness out of it. Because ultimately, both of them know the other is only doing it simply to maintain their sense gratification. It's just pure selfishness with two people just reciprocating, and it's just beautiful material nature, because no one becomes happy by the end of it because they realize that the exchange is not genuine. So this is ultimately going on, and that's exactly what this verse is saying. It's just a mental concoction, this material enjoyment. It's not real. It's not that every single person out there wants to serve us and give us all facility for our enjoyment, and not everyone wants to abide by our control. This concept of enjoying separately from Krishna is complete illusion, and it's just our foolish game that we choose to play. Krishna designed this world that he's the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer, and if you want to have a fight about it with him, well, tough luck. You know, he's a big guy. I mean, he plays as a little cowboy, but he's got good connections. You know, he runs everything, and it's perfect because that's his natural position, and our natural position is Prakriti, is his servant. And it's not that it's not that everyone just becomes, you know, mindless slaves. It's free will, and that's ultimately why we can't even associate with a false ego. We have so much free will. We compromise our own free will for our desires. We associate with these modes of material nature. We let them govern us. But ultimately, in the spiritual world, we don't have to abide by that. We just have pure free will, and we can freely serve Krishna to our heart's content. And Prabhupada will often say that if you analyze everything that everyone does, ultimately you conclude that everyone is serving. Everyone is serving someone. If they're not serving someone, then they're serving their senses. You're serving something, always. So why deny that principle of our life? Why deny that serving? And that doesn't mean that, you know, everyone should become a butler and everyone should become, you know, a maid. it means that you do things for others, and ultimately with our spiritual conception, then you don't just do material philanthropic things, you do things that help people to go to Krishna. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that violence is not bringing people to Krishna, because you know if you don't bring them Krishna, then they will actually suffer. So that means you're kind of almost like the cause of their suffering, if you want to look at it in that way. I mean, he told Arjuna to fight. You can't sit by and just let people suffer. You have to do something. You have to at least do a little something in your life, something related to helping people get out of this world. You can't just sit there and watch them suffer. I mean, some are a lot better at doing it than others. Some are really good at it. You know, you see these amazing preachers, and they go around, and every single person they touch becomes Krishna conscious. Excuse me. Or you see these amazing book distributors, and some, you know, you can go. Some people can go on books, and they can do it all day, and they get one book out. But some, they just seem to not only just distribute books, but make devotees, and not just make devotees, cultivate devotees, and make them really inspired devotees who go out and make more devotees. So there's always going to be a difference of ability. But ultimately, we know the story of the little spider and Hanuman. The little spider takes one little rock, and Hanuman takes a big mountain. But in Krishna's eyes, it's all the same. You just do what you can. And there are different levels of surrender. One person will surrender every single ounce of their being, every single breath, every single action. And others will surrender maybe, you know, their spare time, all their spare time, or half their spare time, or a spare time on the weekend, but they're doing the process, and they're doing their small amount, and this small amount will intensify, because the spiritual is eternal and it's ongoing and it's perpetually re-enlivening itself, whereas the material, it's going up, it's going down, it's going around, it's going everywhere, but it's never going to be the same. And it's just who's this philosopher? It says you can never stand in the same river twice. He's ancient Greek philosopher, I can't remember his name. But he's saying as soon as you step in the river, the water is flowing. So you... Maybe, yeah. I don't know that... Yeah, I have to check it up. But, like, yeah, you step in the river and it moves. It's gone. That same river that you were standing in is impossible to reach again. And this is like the material nature. It's like it's just constantly moving. And you're never in the same place, but it's always temporary. It moves. So, especially for the soul, which is eternal, this is really hard. I mean, what are some of the hardest things in life? It's the temporary. You buy your favorite new your favorite new object, your new piece of technology, and it breaks. How sorry are you when it breaks? Or if it doesn't break, the limitations of it bore you. So even if it doesn't break, even if it lasts all your life, the experience is temporary. You're so bored with it because there's not eternally ever-flowing bliss coming from it. It's not Satchitananda. It's the perverted reflection. And this is what we're anxious for. And it sounds like, you got to be impatient because you always want pleasure. And it's that's what it sounds like. If someone always wants pleasure in the material world, it means that, you know, Prabhu, it's a little bit too much. It's, you know, you got to realize this world is not capable of fulfilling that. But the spiritual world is capable. It is always pleasurable. Always, you're always, and it's not just like inflated false happiness, like there's no variety and everyone just has a big smile stapled to their face and there's only one emotion and that emotion is happiness, and if you're not happy you are not in the spiritual world. No, there's everything that is here is a perversion. The anger here is perversion. The frustration, there is the ultimate feeling that gives us some form of not sense gratification, but actually gratification, full spiritual gratification. The gopis, they're in separation and they're in agony. But this agony is bliss. And it's really hard for most people to conceive of. I don't meditate much on it. It's beyond my level. But I mean, it, like, you know, I don't know if some people get that when you really kind of, you got that feeling, but you kind of take shelter and you're angry, but it's like powerful or something. Does anyone ever get that? Like when you're angry, but like you feel kind of surcharged, which is not really a good thing. But it's like that. It's like if you get like the spiritual world has the perfection of all these emotions, and the feeling is just perfect, and it makes great lila. You know, there's always something going on, I mean, Radharani is feeling these emotions to the point that, you know, when they come to the material world, that she's going to leave her body, so to speak. Like she's dying of, you know, and you know when you have people get surcharged with emotion, they faint. I mean, you read about these bhava and these emotions. People are fainting, and I mean, when you read what happens to Lord Chaitanya, the transformations of his body, which is ultimately spiritual, it's insane. There's just so much emotion that the body cannot contain it within. I mean, if people take drugs and things, we aspire for these greater experiences. What about this? I mean, and this is achievable. It takes a lot, but guess what? It's real and it's permanent and it lasts. Whereas all these other things, they're a lot easier to get, but eventually the effect wears off or the damage kicks in and things happen. And this is what they are. They're just perverted reflections, and they're just ultimately... The happiness that we get from them is, as the verse says, mental concoction. So, I mean, it's very difficult to then magically turn everything into spiritual, wonderful, blissful, amazingly Krishna-connected. But we take our steps. We take our steps. Prabhupada even said that the alcoholic who is saying this, tasting this wine is Krishna. He's doing something, some devotional service, or, you know, something devotional. He's thinking of Krishna. Yeah, so ultimately, if you've already given up those habits, then you can taste the, you know, the orange juice and experience. I mean, but it's Krishna says, I am the taste in water. But some people interpret that as pure water. Some people interpret that as water from the drinking fountain over there. But no, it means I'm the water in Sankhya philosophy is taste. It produces taste. Liquid is the word that we would use. Krishna says, I am the taste of liquid. I am the essence of taste. I am all that is tasty, that is good, that tastes nice, or, you know, the extremities of it. That is Krishna. So if you can, you know, if you can just simply stop for one morsel in your meal, or one meal in a week or whatever, and say Krishna is this taste, then you're making some progress, and that progress is permanent. If you did every meal, then you're probably spiritually realized or really enthusiastic. And, you know, we always talk that Krishna is prasadam. I mean, it's Krishna's eaten his food. There's little nibbles of it from him. You can't see it because he does it with his eyes. You know, some people say the taste in prasadam is Krishna's saliva. Some people like that and some people don't. But, I mean, you know, it's surcharged with Krishna. And Krishna is just, if he's not in there as prasadam, he's already in every single particle. Everything is, like, ultimately, it's his mercy. And if we can just realize that, the Bhagavad Gita has so many verses of this, I am that, of that, I am this, you know, of animals, of this and that, you know, he's giving us so many keys to remember him, to unlock the remembrance of Krishna. You go out and the wind blows, it purifies on the wind. You know, you look at the sun, you know, the sun and the moon are my eyes. He's everything. I mean, he's that energy that makes this tiny seed turn into a massive tree. Like, you have to look at a tree and just go... I mean, the scientists, I remember a couple of years ago, claimed that they made life. And all they did was they got a nucleus of an already made cell, which God made, and they put it into a synthetic cell. So basically, they kind of... pulled a pot plant put a plant out of the soil and put it into you know, this mulch that they made, you know, and all they really did was kind of make the mulch out of the ingredients of the earth. Anyway, there's one story like this in the distant future. The scientists are they're fully progressed to the best of their ability, and they make their spaceship and they fly up to God, and they go, God, we thank you for creating this world. We appreciate that you've done all this effort. But we are now ready to take control of this world. We are now sufficiently advanced that we can run this world. And God is humble. He says, okay, this is a genuine proposal. I can accept this. But as my to answer my responsibility as God, I have to be sure. I have to make sure you can do this task. So this is a Christian story. So as I created life from dust, you must also create life from dust. And the scientists look at each other with a big grin on their face and say, this we can do. And then God adds the next condition. He says, you must find your own dust. You must find your own dust. Nothing in this world has not been created by God. So people are so strenuously trying to create something that God did not create from that which God created. And this is absurd. And this is really trying to be God, which, you know, is the mental concoction that we are here to do. We are really getting this sense gratification of trying to be God. But no, everything is actually connected to Krishna. And Krishna is indirectly or directly running everything. If he's indirectly running it, because he's got places to be, you know, gopis to see, Yamunas to swim in. But ultimately, he's connected to everything here. So Yoga Maya, we say Mahamaya, we say Yoga Maya. Yoga means connection. It means connect. So how does something become Yoga Maya? We use it in Krishna service. And then we say it becomes spiritual. How does it become spiritual? But wait a minute, actually, Krishna is already in the particle. So it is spiritual. We're just realizing that it's spiritual. So, you know, ultimately, everything is spiritual because it's from Krishna. And it's maintained by Krishna to the minute particle. So we are just simply thinking that it's not. And this is our illusion. This is our concoction, our mental concoction. So we must try to see everything in this world in connection to Krishna. And we try as much as we can to use it in the service of Krishna. And if that's too difficult, then we do what is more recommended anyway. We use it in the service of devotees. And the Majjhima will see... The Kanishtha will see himself as a devotee. The Majjhima will see, you know, envious, innocent people who need to become devotees. And he'll see other devotees and he'll see superiors. The Uttama Adhikari will see everyone is a devotee. And that this is... ultimately, everyone is a devotee and we have to make them realize that. You know, you don't have to pick the biggest, baddest people first. You know, you don't have to go and find terrorists and preach to them and get shot. You can start with your friends. And you don't have to, like, think that you're converting. You never convert. Krishna consciousness is not something... Prabhupada says it's Sanatana Dharma. He says that at the start. I think he says it in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Straight from the side, he says, this is Sanatana Dharma. This is eternal nature. This is not something you fabricate on people. You do not change them from one doctrine to the next. You don't change someone to Krishna consciousness. They are Krishna conscious. You simply reveal it in their heart again. And so you have to realize that too, and you have to kind of apply that. You can't just push Krishna consciousness onto someone and drop it on them and expect them to carry it. And it's one of the biggest, vastest philosophies of the universe. I mean, it's possible. It's spiritual knowledge. It comes from Krishna himself. He has to give it. You can't just throw it on people. But they have it inside of them, and they always have. They're just a little lost. We're just a little lost. Indrajima Swami told us at Woodstock, in Polish Woodstock, we went there and you have the crazy punks with the purple, green, rainbow mohawks and they're completely intoxicated, fainting in the dirt in spiritual ecstasy. And they're completely lost and they're just so smelly and horribly dressed, and if they are dressed. And he said, you do not think you're better than these people. You're not better than these people. You're simply more fortunate. Simply more fortunate. This is, we aren't better than anyone else. What, is there a soul that's better than another soul? No. We're made equal. We're all variety, but we're all equal. So they're just caught up, like we were caught up. So being in that position, we should feel even more compassion for them because we know what it's like. And... Why not just start with someone, pick an old school friend. Sometimes just give people prasadam. That's what we do in Australia, just feed people. People love when you feed them. They don't need philosophy so much, they just need food. But that's going to change. And we always say, you know, next life they got a human birth or whatever, but no matter what it is, whether it takes a billion lifetimes or if it takes one lifetime or it takes a moment, it's still permanent and it's a permanent effect. That's a jñāta sakriti. It's sakriti, it's benefit. It's a jñāta sakriti, it's unknown, but it's sakriti nonetheless. It's benefit, and it will add up. You need a 1%, you know, to add up to the 2%. You need somewhere, you need to start somewhere, so why not just start? And, you don't have to run off into the biggest city and get on a big box and yell. I mean, if it works, it works, but you can do things small. And sometimes it just means that you have to work on yourself. Like Bhakti Tirtha Swami's books, Spiritual Warrior, he talks about help yourself so you can help other people. Because when you're saving someone in the water and you can't swim, then you can't save them. You'll drown also. So, you know, you don't go out and, you know, go to the biggest nightclub in Amsterdam and then try to preach and then try not to drink and get involved in what's going on. No. You go from your safe platform and you can take a little risk, but not too much of a risk. You know, and then you just bring people on. Any questions, comments, chastisements? Yep. I think that's, well, the point was he never really kind of propounded this doctrine of non-existence. He just never said anything. He had no opinion. And straight away, his disciples made doctrines because they wanted to know what this was. And this is ultimately Buddhism now, so it's one of these doctrines. So, I mean, he didn't say anything. And he even tricked them into doing some bhakti because a lot of them worship Buddha. So he's tricking them into making some advancement. Prabhupada says that Buddhism is it's not the process is sankirtan, so it's kirtan, which they're going to start soon. The process is not to sit and meditate. So he explains it like when your child is being mischievous, you get him to sit in the corner. He cannot do it eternally, so it is not the process he can always do, but it will work for some time and it will stop him from doing bad things. So, you know, you see that the Buddhism stop people from killing animals. And ultimately, it makes them develop moral values, which is so lacking in the world. You see people in the streets, the people who've got the most moral values are the Buddhists. They come up to you, they don't want to harm anyone and things like that. You have a real philosophical discussion, which ends up with nothing, but the beginning is nice because they have Dharma again. Yeah, I mean, his yuga cycle, it's like you start at the start of the yuga cycle, you have all these really pious beings, and then everyone kind of gets degraded as everything is temporary in this world. But you see, like Kali Yuga, those who are still around because they have some desires, intense desires that can't be fulfilled, and they come, and then, of course, then people circulate through the animal kingdom as well. There are so many, it's such a network that ultimately everyone gets what they want, what they desire, but then they're purified because the soul has some kind of memory. You know, we forget, but we have some kind of memory. We realize, and eventually we kind of realize we're chewing the chew. Actually, if we didn't forget, we'd go crazy in this world because we want to enjoy, but we know there's nothing to be enjoyed. So this is actually why we do forget, because if we remembered everything, we would... Well, he breathes in everything, and then so it's maintained inside of him, and then he breathes it back out, and then it just keeps going. So they can take as long as they need, because Krishna doesn't doesn't want us to not be doesn't want us to be in the spiritual world and not want to be there. You know, he wants us to be really sure of it. So that's why it is such a hard process sometimes to get out of here, because a lot of the time we don't want to. Or there's something, and he's going to take, you know, like rather than then let us in with just a few things, he's just going to chip it all off, you know? Like, why have any problems? Why not just have it flawless? Indrajima Swami gives this lecture, and people say, you know, he has this little imaginary person, he says, I'll take the bad with the good, and he says, no, why not just take the good? Why compromise? So Krishna is like that. He's, why take a half-surrendered person and throw them in the realm of everyone who's surrendered and try and get them to, you know, get along? They're going to freak out. In the bloop. So yeah, so some takes more. But this yuga is very special because Lord Chaitanya has come. So try to get out now. No, a once in a day of Brahma, right? Yeah, so every 1,000 yuga cycles, get out now. Special incentive. Special incentive. Chant Hare Krishna and run. Grandraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki